So welcome to the September meeting of the Concept Study Group. We are hearing a lead share from Greg R. on Concept 9 today, followed by 30 to 40 minutes of open discussion on the concept. We are recording this meeting, and if you speak during the discussion portion, please be sure to share appropriately in terms of protecting your own anonymity here. And I do want to invite a volunteer to get us started in reading the concepts, which you can find on page 615 of the Big Red Book,
or also
on a separate device. Yes, Mina, please go ahead.
Okay, 12 concepts. Concept one, the final responsibility and ultimate authority for ACA World Service should always reside in the collective conscience of our whole fellowship. Concept two, authority for the active maintenance of our World Service is hereby delegated to the actual voice, the effective conscience for our whole fellowship. Concept three, as a means of creating and maintaining a clearly defined working relationship between the ACA meetings, the ACA WSO Board of Trustees, and its staff and committees, and thus ensuring their effective leadership, it is herein suggested that we endow each of these elements of service with a traditional right of decision. Concept four, throughout our structure, we maintain at all responsible levels a traditional right of participation. Should I keep reading or do you want to switch?
Sure, you can go ahead.
Okay. Concept five, throughout our structure, a right of petition prevails, thus assuring us that minority opinion will be heard and that petitions for the redress of grievances will be carefully considered. Concept six, on behalf of ACA as a whole, our annual business conference has the principal responsibility for the maintenance of our World Service, and it traditionally has the final decision respecting large matters of general policy and finance. But the annual business conference also recognizes that the chief initiative and the active responsibility in the most of these matters would be exercised primarily by the trustee members of the World Service Organization when they act among themselves as the World Service Organization of Adult Children of Alcoholics. And I pass.
Thank you. Jewel, please go ahead.
Sure. Number seven, the annual business conference recognizes that the articles of incorporation and the bylaws of the Adult Children and Alcoholics World Service Organization are legal instruments and that the trustees are thereby fully empowered to manage and conduct all the world affairs of Adult Children of Alcoholics. It's further understood that our World Service Organization relies upon the force of tradition and the power of the ACA pursuit for its final effectiveness. Concept eight, the trustees of the World Service Organization act in this primary capacity. With respect to the larger matters of overall policy and finance, they are the principal planners and the administrators. They and their primary committees directly manage these affairs. And then concept nine, good service leaders, together with sound and appropriate methods of choosing them, are at all levels indispensable for further functioning and safety. The primary World Service leadership must necessarily be assumed by the trustees of the Adult Children of Alcoholics World Service Organization. 10, each service responsibility should be matched by an equal service authority. The scope of each authority is to be always well-defined, whether by tradition, by resolution, by specific job description, or by the operating policy and procedure manuals and bylaws. 11, When the trustees hold final responsibility for ACA's World Service Administration, they should always have the assistance of the best possible outstanding committees, corporate trustees, executives, staffs, and consultants. Therefore, the composition of the underlying committees and service boards, the personal qualifications of their members, the manner of their induction into service, the systems of their rotation, the ways in which they are related to each other, the service rights and the duties of our executives, staff, and consultants, together with the proper basis for the financial compensation of each special worker, will always be matters for serious care and concern. And number 12, which is our spiritual foundation, in all its proceedings, Alcoholic Anonymous WSO Service Organization shall observe the spirit of the ACA 12 traditions, taking great care that the conference never be the seat of perilous wealth or power, that significant operating funds plus ample reserve be its prudent financial principle, that none of the conference members shall ever be placed in a position of unqualified authority over any of the others, that all important decisions might be reached by decision vote and whatever possible by substantial unanimity, that no WSO action ever be personally punitive or an incitement to public controversy, that through WSO may act through the service of adult children of alcoholics, they shall never perform any acts of government, and that, like in the Fellowship of Adult Children of Alcoholics, which it serves, the AC itself will always remain democratic in thought and process and action. That is
Thank you both for reading. And I will turn over the floor to Greg to start us off with a 10 or so minute lead share. Do you need some timing cues, Greg?
Yeah, if you'd give me a hack at 9 minutes, that'd be great. Thanks. I actually would like to start off with the serenity prayer, if we could, please. So Spirit, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Yeah. Thank you very much for inviting me, Karen. And I think you and I had this conversation, but maybe we didn't. Maybe it was intuitive on my part. This is a great one, a great concept for me, because it's one that I've had to study a lot. And in case it happens with a couple of meetings down the road, this concept is tied in very tightly with concept 11. So you might hear some duplication when that presentation happens as well. But one of the things that I find fascinating about this concept is that it really is the only concept that talks from the perspective of the fellowship as opposed to the actors. So the other concepts are about how I act in service. This one is about how do we select, or what concerns do we have in selecting people to be in service. And you know, we have some great things that I'll reference very quickly, and I'll talk about them a little bit. There are the norms in the appendix 11 in the OPPM that are adopted by the board, and so you know the board individually signs up to these norms, and they guide the way the board operates, particularly in the ways of in instances of conflict, but they also give a general scope about how to interact with each other. That's one way. So when we pick a service leader, one of the things to look at is, is this somebody who can adhere to the norms that we have agreed to within this group? And it's not just the trustees. It's the norms in each individual group, the intergroups, even a study group. like this one. What are the norms? And what do we do when someone violates the norms? How do we ensure that we, in fact, maintain those by the way we select people and the way we operate in general? Another thing that I really like, and I don't know if all of you have read it, but Aaron's writing in the that's on the concepts, whatever you call it, website. The last paragraph she has is really powerful. It says, "For my personal recovery, this experience has strengthened my commitment to humility, to put getting things right above being right, or taking the easier, quick way out. It has required that I face uncomfortable situations in the interest of healthy future functioning. Gratitude for a life-changing program strengthens my commitment to be guided by the concepts so that others may continue to receive the gift of recovery." That's what we aspire to when we pick trustees. We're looking for people for the board who can set aside their need to be right, can set aside their critical parent, and sometimes, you know, persuade their inner child, be their own loving parent in such a way that they can operate for the good of the fellowship as well as the good of the board. And so I like that paragraph that she has at the end of her statement. There was something else I was going to do. Okay, I got that. The other thing that I you know, this is not easy. This concept is not easy for the fellowship. It's not easy for a group. You know, if you have only two people who've signed up for the positions for a group, how do you enroll others to be volunteers to serve in the positions for the group? And those people that sign up, how do you, if only one person signs up and they clearly can't uphold the service, the norms for the group, what do you do then? You know, how do you manage that? And one of the things that's very difficult in a group is to say, wow, and we have, we have intergroups, and we have an example of that in our intergroup locally where a person stood up for a position and clearly could not perform in that position, but they were the only ones that volunteered. What, you know, we have to look at, what do we do in that circumstance? How do we mentor people to be able to move forward? How do we, you know, maybe that person needs mentoring of somebody else and they can step into that position. And sometimes, I don't want to call attention to it, but sometimes we have need to just remove somebody from a position because they can't adhere to this paragraph, which talks about our future functioning and safety. That's a really big obligation that we come to meet when we're in service. The other thing that I want to point to, and Yasmin is familiar with this, just having gone through this process, is we have spent a great deal of time over the last now almost 4 years, 3.5 years, in developing some sort of guidelines for selecting new trustees. And it's very challenging. And it's challenging. I don't want to even in some way diminish the challenge that groups have in picking leaders. So one of the things that's very hard to do is what is implied by this concept. How is this person really using their loving parent? How, in fact, are they demonstrating their recovery in this program so that they can be a service to at the level that they're at? There are some positions in the group that we can pick somebody with 6 months of experience and almost no inner child work, loving parent work. But there are other positions, and it comes all the way up to the board of trustees, where it is really incumbent upon those individuals to operate from the perspective of their loving parent not from the perspective of their critical parent or their wounded inner child. How do we do that? And one of the things that we have done for the nominating committee is we have set up a set of questions, and then we interview references as well. But the questions aren't just the guidelines. So for instance, I'll pull up the guidelines if I can find them again. I've got so many documents open. Well, I thought I could. All right, well, I just do it this way. Okay, I'll do it again. I see where I had it. So one of the things that we do is we have a set of guidelines that are prescribed in the OPPM for trustees. Those guidelines are pretty much black and white. You know, how long has this person been in attendance at ACA meetings? How many WSO monthly meetings have they attended? So on and so on and so on. But then we get down to how, how does this person operate under stress in a conflict? And for that, we not only need to interview the person, but also look at references. We ask for anywhere from 3 to 6 references. Is that my 9 minutes? Okay. And so that's something that...
9 minutes.
Okay, that's something that's really a challenge. And we put together a bunch of questions, and I invite all of you, I know Yasmina knows them, but I invite you to look at these and say, wow, are these representative of the kinds of things that we need to look at for emotional sobriety? And if they're not, then send a note to the nominating committee and say, hey, how about asking about this? Because everyone has a responsibility for our leadership. That's all I've got. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Greg, for offering your experience, strength, and hope on this concept. And I really appreciated hearing your perspective, and you were perfectly within the 10-minute window. So nicely done. I will open the floor up for questions or comments. And since we're a very small group, there's no need to put time constraints. Just I would encourage everybody to sort of pay a little bit of attention so that you're talking for no longer than 2 or 3 minutes at a time. Who would like to comment?
Hi, everyone. My name is Yasmina. And I'd like to go first. I also have to apologize. I'm traveling today, so I will kind of share and go. Sorry about that. But I didn't want to miss this meeting. I love it so much. So thank you, Greg, for an amazing lead. And it really, thanks also for really pointing out that this is really one of the concepts that really speaks from the perspective of fellowship. I didn't kind of like, you know, I didn't see that until someone, you know, like it's kind of like sometimes it's right there and you don't see it. It really kind of made me think about kind of how it relates to some of the other concepts in terms of like responsibility and authority. And it really made me think about the fact that fellowship does have the final authority, right? Like it is the deciding body. Like fellowship makes ACA, fellowship makes everything that comes out of ACA, including in the end, WSO board. But it also has that responsibility, right? To kind of check upon, to question, to really, to ask. And it's kind of like, I think in concept 9, it's addressed that kind of some of the ways that can be done, right? Because it's not always clear. And it really made me kind of think that, concept 9 really kind of points towards the fact that a healthy fellowship, a healthy program, is the one that, where that can happen, where fellowship does have the final authority, right? And where that is enabled with clear processes and procedures. And that it's kind of almost a measurement of a healthy meeting, a healthy group, a healthy committee, healthy fellowship. And kind of like, yeah, the concept nine, I really kind of see, kind of gives the parameters to work with to cross-check. It's almost like a healthy checklist. Like, you know, are we doing this? You know, is this being done? Is this available? Is this an opportunity? Is it clear to everyone? Is everyone familiar with it? And kind of, I really liked how you talked about at one point, like even in the group, like what happens if there is only one person who volunteers, and is it a healthy group if there's only one person volunteering, right? And B, you know, what happens if that person is obviously not suitable for whatever reasons for the position they're volunteering for? And how will that affect the group? And kind of like, it's kind of like brings it back to, it is group's authority to, you know, like to choose people for a position, but also it's group's responsibility to make sure that it's healthy enough to train new members to grow towards taking positions. So there's not only one person volunteering, and hopefully the persons volunteering are of healthy predisposition. You know, and again, like that balance of authority, responsibility, and what are avenues to look at them, to keep evolving them, to keep questioning, to keep thinking about them, to keep applying them to ourselves. It's a great concept. And thanks for also linking it to concept 11, because I was kind of like rereading concept 11. I was like, so thank you. Great lead. Thanks so much. That's all.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Yasmina. We're glad you're here, even though you're going to have to jump off.
I will be jumping off like right now. So thank you. I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
Good to see you, Yasmina.
Thank you. Would anybody else like to comment?
This is Jewel. I'm just going to basically hit on the points in this concept that really spoke to me, partly because I'm here wanting to have a good ACA meeting and a reminder of the concepts other than just reading them by discussing them. One is, I love the fact it said good service leaders. And I love that. And it was talking about service work, which therefore means the focus is beyond ourselves. And for me, when I have done service, I have had a service description to follow. It's sort of a guideline for me of what I do in my role. And I do know that the organization is looking at putting a service manual together. And I'm very excited about that, because without something as a baseline, I think what I've been experiencing is service, good service is defined by ages and service in a group. And so that is where, or whatever those people that started it say, is what you're supposed to do. One of them was, is when I was attending a meeting and a newcomer came and they said, could they lead? And I was new to ACA and I thought, well, why not? I've studied concepts in other programs, and this concept says good leadership and sound and appropriate methods of choosing them all are at all levels and indispensable for our future functioning and safety. Well, I said sure to the other person who had been there the week before, and an original member came back and said, we don't let newcomers lead and read. They have to be in the program a year before we let them do any of this. And so each time I go back, I don't want conflict in a meeting. And I don't want that within a group that serves me. But I also have no authority other than bring it up. And when I did, about having a group conscience, then that created another conflict, and on and on and on. So I'm not getting into that. That's another whole situation. But basically, I am so glad that you're studying this and going to be putting it out to help those. And I think in doing service, we progress along from the beginning of showing up, speaking up, participating, then learning through the different roles that we do. And then we work together, as it said, as a unit, whether it's a group or a district or higher part. And then I'll read the last part. The primary world service leadership must necessarily be assumed by the trustees of Adult Children of Alcoholics World Service Organization. And I've been following this on the web for quite a while and watching what's going on. And I don't know, are they behind this, putting it together, of putting together a concept study, the service manual? Or is it just members? As it said, the fellowship is what leads the fellowship. So I'm interested in some of the background on what brought me to this group that's participating in fellowship and service.
Thank you. Can I address some of that? I really appreciate your sharing.
Go ahead, Greg.
And what you said about time and service, oh, I'm right with you. I think that we have in the Big Red Book created a model that is not sustainable. On pages 579 through 583, I think. Yeah, 583. It talks about, it associates time with our standing or our recovery, and it just, it's not really true. It says newcomer sharing, we can expect people to share as newcomers for the first 1 to 6 weeks. I have encountered many people who've been in the program for 2 years and they still share like newcomers. And I realize that that's where their place is. I can't do anything about it. And then I have encountered people who have such great spiritual, there's one trustee that blew us away when he applied. They have such a spiritual grounding that I can say, wow, this person acts like they have 20 years in this program and they only have one or two. The other thing I wanted to say and talk about, more related to what Yasmina said, but it does relate a bit to what you were saying, Jewel, is, this doesn't just apply to the trustees or the group positions. This applies to even committee chairs and committee members of the WSO. And so, when we look at a committee we have that's doing service, we still have to have the ability to grow people into those positions. And that's a challenge. That's a challenge when you have, for instance, I'm the chair of the Literature Evaluation Committee as well as the Nominating Committee. And with the Literature Evaluation Committee, we have people that are volunteering to be on the committee that don't really have a lot of experience in ACA with the various types of literature. How do we grow them into becoming contributing members of that subcommittee? And that's all our responsibility. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. This is Karen. I'd like to comment as well. And I'm going to come in with a question about the sound and appropriate methods of choosing our leaders. And this is also sort of taking advantage of your experience specifically on the nominating committee, Greg. I'm curious about, I understand that it's a very thorough vetting process with references being requested and so on. And without any specifics, can you share whether there's ever been a situation where sort of there was a last minute update you received about a candidate that led to the nomination being reconsidered? And I'm not talking, I know there's been discussion about like minority opinion in the ratification vote at the actual ABC, which I find extremely problematic because that can create a lot of distraction and disruption of ABC proceedings. But something similar where like right before the nomination was supposed to take effect and be confirmed either by the board sort of initially or by the ABC, information was obtained about a candidate that would have led to reconsidering the nomination and what the process for that would be as the process currently stands.
Okay. First of all, we've not had, as you've asked the question, and I'll address it a little bit differently in a minute. As you've asked the question, no, we have not encountered a situation where we have, in effect, when I'm put it into the context of our process, that we've submitted a nominee to the board and then had the board come back and say, we have some additional information. We don't think this person's yet ready for the board. We have that in our process. And what we're doing right now with board, we've come to a realization that the board was doing something different once we gave them a list of nominees. The board was handling that different than we thought they were. And so we're in discussions with the board to update that process. Mm-hmm. Ostensibly, we give the board a list of, we say, these are the candidates we believe will make good board members. The board then comes back and lets us know, not if they accept or reject them, but if they object to any of them. And so the board's not picking them, that it's a very fine line, but they bring it back to the nominating committee, and we have to relook at that individual and say, you know, we can do one of two things. We can say, oh, we didn't have that information, we're glad you let us know, and we can withdraw the nomination. Also, we can look at it and say, you know, we had that information, and here's why, even though we had that information, here's why we think that person will still make a great board member. Then when we submit that back to the board, they can then say, we still disagree with you. We need to take that to the annual business conference and have them make the decision. The other thing that has happened, though, is that we have had two instances within the nominating process that have been process challenging. One was we've had someone that we've said, nope, you're not ready yet. And that's a big thing. We're not rejecting people. We're saying, you're not ready yet. Here's what we think you can do to get yourself ready for the board in the future. The other thing that's happened is we only had three of us on the nominating committee one time, and they were on a sabbatical. They were off, actually, she'd taken on a new job and was not available. And the two of us that were left had a disagreement on one of the people that we're looking at. And one member desired to abstain. Well, we cannot nominate somebody with one person's vote. Just can't do it. And so we had to wait until we had the third member available. And then we were able to, okay, now we're going to vote. And the person's an awesome trustee, but it wouldn't have mattered, you know, it wouldn't have mattered. If we had to wait until we had new nominating committee members, we'd have waited until we had new nominating committee members. We just, you know, it's just like it's not right for the board to choose new board members. It's not right for one person from the fellowship, like what Yasmina was saying, one person from the fellowship to choose new board members. So those are some of the things that we've dealt with. We've dealt with lots of other issues, but those are some of the things that we've dealt with. We've had people that sounded too good. Yeah. You know, if you get if you get three references for somebody and each one of them says, oh, this person walks on water. Well, what do you think they can do to grow? Oh, they don't need to. They walk on water. Well, what we do is we go for some more references because that's not what we're looking for. So those are different things that we've encountered and how we've managed them.
Your attention, please. If anyone has found any funds in the second floor women's washroom, please turn them in at the reference desk. Thank you very much.
The joys of operating from a public library setting. Sorry for that light interruption here. Thank you, Greg. I appreciate you sharing your insights. I do have a follow-up question, sort of to narrow my question down a little bit more. And that is sort of after, like when candidates are posted for ratification at the ABC, presumably 2 weeks before the event in the delegate binder, is where that information would be made public. Is there a mechanism if somebody has information that might not have been surfaced in the vetting process, is there a mechanism for a member of the fellowship, a delegate, or any member of the fellowship to come forward and say, I know this person, I see a problem with this person, I would request for that to be looked at?
That's interesting. There is a mechanism, but it's kind of brushed over. And the mechanism is for that individual. We don't, since the ratification process is for all the board, that also means generally the board members have been approved by the board or accepted, I should say, accepted by the board prior to the ABC. We've had a couple where I think the first year we ended up the board. Oh, no, that was before us. Never mind. Ignore that. So there's not a process that I know of that the delegates can say ahead of time, I have a problem with this person. The only time that I know of that they can bring up a problem with the person is at the ABC itself. I don't think they can do it in advance, but it is an interesting question. Okay,
how would they do it at the ABC?
Oh, there's a ratification process, and you know, in the ratification process, it's interesting. They should be able to say something in the ratification process, but we've rushed the ratification process so much. I've objected to that in the background.
You'd be in favor of a minority opinion to be heard in the ratification process?
Absolutely.
Got
absolutely.
It. Okay. Good right. to know. Thank you.
Yep. Are you taking that? Excuse me, just a minute, Jewel. Are you taking that to the ABC committee?
I am not sure what I'm doing with that information. I am just gathering information.
Okay.
Because it was not, and that may have been my mistake in this year's conference, which I was chairing and attending for the first time. Minority opinion was not heard in the board ratification process, and I have not been aware of any other mechanism for delegates or members of the fellowship to come forward if they have concerns that they fear were not considered in the nomination committee process.
There never has been in the, five ABCs that I've participated in. And it's a really good point. And again, I want to give you kudos for the way you handled this year's ABC. That's a tough one.
That was an interesting challenge.
Okay, that's now I'm done.
Any other questions or comments regarding Jewel? Yes, please go ahead.
I just wanted to say your question and the clarification was very important to me as an individual. And it's important to me as an adult child, having not seen good systems in place or modeled. And Greg, I appreciate so much this formula that I'm writing down as I'm hearing you and want to know where can I get some of this so that I have something to model my actions. And I am so excited being here with both of you. I feel very blessed.
Well, Jewel, the thing that I would recommend most, are you familiar with the ACAWSO.org website?
Very much.
Okay. If you go to the nominating committee,
okay,
there's a link on there, one of the links that's a bulleted link to trustee guidelines and application. And you can see the kinds of questions that we're asking of individuals in an effort, largely, like I said, time in the program, that sort of thing is kind of rote. The things we're really trying to dig into how do we determine what level of emotional sobriety an individual has?
Thank you. The other part I would say is just lay people and even new people coming in, once they're ready to enter service, is just being aware of going to the WSO site, and I will be learning it more closely. But as I said, they were newcomers to ACA, but they were not newcomers to 12-step programs. Most 12-step programs all have this basic part. So therefore, these questions that you're talking about today, that you're bringing up, and the conversation is helping me in my personal growth and in my service growth in program. And I have done area, district area, and other levels, and I just want to keep growing. And I think, I'm sorry to say it, but service is hard, but that's where the growth is dealing with real life issues and doing how to do it with love and kindness. Thank you.
Thank you, Jewel. I want to comment on another part of your presentation, Greg, that stood out to me, and that is sort of the distinction of how is the candidate, the service member, the leader that is interested in the service role, how are they engaging their loving inner parent rather than their adult child, their hurting inner child or their critical inner parent when they show up for service. And I think that's a really good starting point for also self-inventory about, am I ready for this service position? Am I ready to do service, period? And one thing that I can say has been sort of a constant factor in my own service experience is that there's a part of me that shows up from a place of hyper responsibility, which is my inner child trying to save itself by saving the world, the community it's in. And that is something that I have to check with myself about a lot. And I'm wondering, I'll just be very direct. Do you have any suggestions for how to check that particular tendency as somebody who's aspiring to be a trusted servant in ACA?
The only real, first of all, that's a red flag for us, by the way, on the nominating committee. It really is. We start seeing somebody that is overwhelmed. One of the questions you can see we have on there is, okay, if you take on this position, what do you need to let go? We really want you to think about that. We don't want just a cavalier answer. What do you need to let go so you can do what's needed in this position? The other thing is that I too take on a lot. And one of the things that I look at is first of all, I'll use my example with my perfectionism, because that's one that's a real big deal. you know, am I trying to please my dead father? I ask myself this, okay, am I trying to please Al? Or am I doing this just because I'm enjoying it and want to do, you know, want to do it? Like I do carpentry work and woodworking, cabinetry, I build musical instruments. And there are aspects of that that really, you really have to focus on doing it well to make it turn out well. And sometimes I find myself still overdoing it, and I have to back up and say, wow, what am I accomplishing by doing it this way? The other thing I recommend is engaging a service sponsor, because a service sponsor will catch you. Now, I had a service sponsor who kept piling more stuff onto me, and I had to take care of my own self. And the way that I did that was I determined what I was capable of, and I said, what do you want me to let go if I do this job? And I really meant it. What do you want me to let go? Right now, my own personal experience, okay? In the last year, made worse by COVID, but I have experienced a lot of depression. I've been on up and down all my life. And when I'm experiencing a lot of depression, when I have obligations, that just buries me. And so one of the things that I have to do during that time is communicate with people and say, I can't do this right now. I cannot do this right now. I don't know if I'll be able to do it in the future, but I cannot do this right now. And that's about being honest with myself before I'm honest with others. Those are thoughts. I mean, these are things that I do, and I still have a challenge with it too, taking on more responsibility than I'm able to actually perform.
Thank you for sharing so candidly. I appreciate that. I have one other question, and that is, again, very specific to your experience, strength, and hope, Greg. What is your perspective on volunteering at the WSO level? What support systems are in place? What is your perspective on the number of volunteers that are entering WSO, and are they sticking around long enough to really grow into their service roles and grow in service? Are they burning out quickly and dropping away? What would you say your perspective is on volunteerism in WSO?
First of all, this is, we have now more volunteers at the WSO level than I've ever seen. And along with that, I don't have high expectations for all of them to stick around. That's not being pejorative. That's not being negative, thinking negatively. It's just, I think that there are people that are going to say, whoa, I'm not ready for this. They won't say it in that way. They just kind of fade away. At the same time, we have so many people that if 25% of them stay around, we've got awesome support. We've got awesome volunteer staff. And one of the concerns that I have, particularly with literature, is that I've gone through some ups and downs. We've gone through some changes in people and policy and all that. And I'm concerned that by not utilizing volunteers and keeping them active, that we're going to lose some. And that's understandable. Mm-hmm. If you don't call on me and I volunteered, well, then hell, I'll take my toys and go someplace else.
Find something else to do, and then you might just not be available when you do call.
That's right. Right. Yeah. And the other thing is it's very, you sort of implied newer people to the program. in service. There was an implication there. I don't know if it was intended. That's what I heard. Mm-hmm. There is a real challenge in people feeling like they're not heard if they're new. They have ideas that really don't fit well with our program yet because they don't know it. Mm-hmm. And it's a real challenge to not discourage those people by saying, you know, we really appreciate your sharing, but that's not what we're looking for here.
I would like to add to that, not meaning to interrupt, but I was speaking for me personally when I wanted to update a contact list. And I feel qualified to do that. I've served on an area and on a state level. So I think I can make a contact list. That goes back to an old hierarchy, which can follow us in any process in life, which takes me to looking at back to what we talk about in program systems in place and what roles were given to me. I did interrupt you because I thought you were about finished or were finished. The delay is coming through. So I'm going to be quiet because you're answering every question and more, and you heard me. And thank you for letting me know you heard me.
Well, Jewel, that's awesome, because one of the problems we have with all the committees, and I have to hand it to Sue V. She is really good at process. I think I'm very good at process. One of the things that before I put together the new literature evaluation subcommittee that we have, I wanted to ensure that I have descriptions, position descriptions. They're not detailed, but they're general enough for somebody to say, oh, I can start with this. Same thing with this last year, last winter, put together a roles and responsibilities for the literature committee as a whole. Again, roles and responsibilities. Lay out for people, what are the things that we're going to need to do? Lay out for the people in each position, what is it that I have to do to contribute to this? We don't have a lot of that in the committees in WSO. We have everybody jumping in and doing something. And that's not bad, but we're older now. We're teenagers. We can start putting together some processes.
How did you notice I was older? I'm new to ACA. But I think that goes back to what this whole thing's about is good leadership. It's not the number of years you've warmed a seat.
Yes. And, you know, I want to bring up something else that's really important, and it relates to both what both of you have said. I'm not perfect, and it's about accepting my imperfections. And not just imperfections like I don't know to do this, but sometimes there are cases where I know to do this and I forget, or I know to do this, but I make a mistake. And a good example was this last Friday. We had a literature evaluation. It's the second meeting of the new literature evaluation subcommittee. And my process for running the meeting, I was being more authoritative than some people desired. And I wasn't, and in particular, we had a couple of people that weren't saying anything in the meeting. And somebody finally said, don't we want to ask the people that aren't sharing what they're thinking? I'm like, it's one of the things that I've worked with clients on for years. You know, I've been a management consultant for years. I'm retired now, but been retired now for what, 11 years, something like 9.5 years. But that's one of the things I used to do is say, you've got people sitting here, whether it be, you know, team members down at the working groups or executive, ask people what they're thinking when they don't bring their, you know, when they don't open their mouth. There's nothing wrong with people sitting there thinking about it, but to contribute, they need to contribute. And we need to give them the nudge to help them along to do that. Yeah.
We just had a good conversation about that at the service norms subcommittee meeting yesterday, where we were also talking about, like, how do you deal with a situation when somebody may be afraid to participate, maybe afraid to voice their views or concerns because of some adult child stuff going on. And that's very hard to manage because it's so much of it is happening at the individual level, and sort of the distrust is very much personal and biographical. And how can a group, how can the service leaders in a group create an environment where people are encouraged to participate? You can't force them to participate if they have an inner barrier to that, but you can at least encourage them to participate rather than ignoring the fact, like you were saying, Greg, that they're sitting there not talking. Or rather than creating an environment where whenever they do try to participate, they feel like they're being shut down.
Right. Perfect. Yep. And another thing that came up Friday was one of those people that was being very quiet said, Greg, I'm sorry. You know, I mean, this wasn't the way it was said, but basically, I'm sorry. I'm having a real hard time concentrating on this meeting because this other task you've got me doing is occupying all of my mental resources. And I said, oh, okay, you know? And then what do you say in that circumstance? You can't say, well, you know, I've had corporate people who've said, well, get your attention in here, deal with that outside the room. You know, that's not where we're at. You know, we're trying to be, what I tell my sponsors, said, my goal as your sponsor is to, one, model loving parents. I'm not going to be your loving parent, but I'm going to try to model loving parent for you. And the second thing is, I want you to grow so that you can model loving parent to others. And that's how you become your own loving parent, is by learning through modeling for others. And I want to do the same thing when I'm chairing a meeting. You know, I want to model that loving parent, not be the authority, because I always hated authority.
Food for thought. Thank you.
I'm going to comment on that. There's a difference between an ego and somebody doing what is within the authority and responsibility of their role. And that's where it reminds me of things that are being said here and the modeling that is taking place. And what is my intention of wanting to do service? And I loved it because I caught myself the other day wanting to go to a meeting and go, blah, 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 blah. No, 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 no. That was an angry adult, a wounded child. And until I can go in as a loving parent and model, and that's where newcomers really give me an opportunity to grow, because I recognized some of the things when they were being quiet and when they got around to wanting to read, they looked at me for permission. And I don't have to give permission because I don't dominate the meeting. It's a group consensus. And to me, that goes on. And when we're talking about at the world service level, that we need to be willing to work and learn with other people. And I'm saying, when I have done service outside of my group, I have learned how to do Excel, to do computer programs. Background in my work came in, and the background in their work came in. And for me, if I had not done service that was above my comfort zone and skill, I wouldn't have been able to learn that I was asked by a gentleman who's an editor of a magazine, and he said, can I help you? I was too embarrassed to say yes, because my writing is not as proficient as an editor or publisher would be. But I look back thinking about that today. And so what if we do go in and fail? And that's where sponsorship is so important. And that to me is where another person that I had room with before is a trustee. and the loving kindness. And I tell the story that when I met this trustee, we were at a big meeting and very well dressed, and this lady in her shoes sweeping. And then I found out she was the chairman of the Board of Trustees. So all levels of service are important. And she, her group had hosted that meeting. And so therefore, I have been modeled. I have been so well, and I'm so blessed, as I say, to be in this room with each of you.
Thank you. One of the things that you hit on several different points there, and one of them reminds me of the hardest lesson that I had regarding service was in AA. Mm-hmm. When I started out, in each position I started out in, I didn't know how to do it. And I had to have someone show me how to do it. And then at the end of the period of time that I was serving, I generally said, well, I've got this down now. I can keep doing it. Well, now it's time for you to move on and do something else. Exactly. You know,
rotation of service, limited service positions, do more service, and then you can grow deeper and wider. Yes. Not become a specialist.
I have one other thing I wanted to sort of zero in on as well regarding the loving inner parent and modeling the loving inner parent. And for me, it, for some reason, probably related to my qualifications for being here and my own personal journey of recovery, but for some reason around the topic of the loving inner parent, one thing that keeps coming up is boundaries. And how do I, as a loving inner parent, showing up for my inner children in whatever manifestation they're presenting, how do I set healthy boundaries rather than building walls, rather than getting enmeshed with other people, rather than sort of giving into my ego and my hero complex that it's upon me to rescue, fix, and control whatever I'm doing service at. But like, how do I set effective boundaries? And frankly, I see some of that challenge in other fellow service members at WSL. There are no clear boundaries. There is no clear, like, who's responsible for what? Where does someone's responsibilities begin? Where do they end? And how clear are they about where their responsibilities begin and where they end? And I think that's an important aspect to look at. And you, Greg, were talking about like process-oriented committee work, like writing committee processes in a way that recognizes what the limits are of somebody's responsibility and what the authorities are that that person needs to be equipped with to be able to effectively do their service that they've committed. That they've committed to. And I think there's I personally see a lot of unclarity there. And I think that creates problems just in terms of lack of boundaries and lack of clarity.
And there's another aspect to this that we have to keep in mind. And that, as you alluded to, we are adult children. And there are those of us that do not honor others' boundaries, do not honor WSO established boundaries. So, and that doesn't make us bad, doesn't make us undesirable. It just means that we have, you know, there are those of us who have such a belief in what we're doing that we'll do anything to push it through. We will circumvent whatever process we need to circumvent to make sure that what we want gets done. And I have two specific instances right now that are going on that I won't even mention, where that's a challenge, you know, and the challenge, it comes back to what I remember. I was so upset in Al-Anon when I found out that nobody else is responsible for honoring my boundaries. I just was livid. So just similarly, we can have boundaries in terms of process within a committee or a subcommittee. And it's the responsibility of everyone on that committee or subcommittee to ensure that all of the people on that committee or subcommittee honor the boundaries, as well as other people in the WSO and the fellowship. And it's hard. It's really hard. It's hard to say to somebody, you know, I appreciate what you're doing, but that's not the way we've said we're going to do it. And then when they go around you and do it anyway, you say, I'm sorry, that's not the way we're going to do it. And then talk to the board, talk to other people to make sure that the process is really clear. And to do that, and that's where a loving parent comes in, to do that in a compassionate way. That's really hard for me. I mean, the last 2 years, I've really focused on watching other people be compassionate, because I was a hard-nosed, not only as a management consultant, but I was a hard-nosed executive and manager. And I'm trying to learn. It's a good point.
Thank you. So I'm noticing that we're at 4:15 Eastern time. I'm at 3:15. I'm in Illinois, so I'm on Central time. But I also want to sort of acknowledge the time constraints on everybody who joined us today. Are we ready? I love the conversation we've had. Are we ready to wrap up at this point? Or are there any further comments that either of you would like to make?
I have no further comments.
And I shall refrain from further comments or questions. We've had a good meeting. It's time to go home.
I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today. And you know, and you all have really done a great job of, like, kind of, you know, reminding me of certain aspects of things that I need to think about. This boundaries, for instance, and you know, local service as well as WSO. It's really been helpful for me too.
Thank you, Greg. I'm going to turn off the recording now.